So, according to a study from the UK's King's College London, there could be six distinct types of COVID-19, each type distinguished by its own particular cluster of symptoms. And scientists say that the symptoms experienced in the first few days of a COVID-19 infection could help predict the course that a patient's illness will follow. To talk us through these six different types of the virus, let's welcome back to Weekend Breakfast Professor Bertram Fielding, Research Director at UWC. Great pleasure to have you back on the show, Prof. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Sarah Jane, and thank you for having me on the show.
Tell me, do we know how the team at UCL came to identify these clusters?
Yeah, so they went through the literature, the reports that we have of COVID. Now, remember, COVID-19 is a disease, and the virus that causes COVID-19 is SARS coronavirus 2. So this is the seventh coronavirus. When they looked at reports from various countries and various hospitals, they noticed something very interesting. Based on how you cluster these symptoms, they could kind of predict, when they combine that with other factors, who would require hospitalization and who would require ventilation, so require oxygen. So it was quite an interesting study, actually.
How helpful is it for the layperson to be aware of these distinguishing characteristics of each of the six types of virus? Or is it something really that only medical bods need to know?
I think it shows the public that really, even when we look at these type of symptoms and these type of clustering, that only a very small percentage of people end up in hospital. So these researchers would say, if you look at the one cluster, and they call it severe level 3, where there's really abdominal and respiratory symptoms, only about 20% of those people ended up in hospital requiring ventilation. So it really gives the medical fraternity a chance to really predict 8 days in advance almost who would require hospitalization and who would require oxygen in the end. So it gives us a better fighting chance in the end.
So which characteristics then are likely to indicate that a patient will experience the virus in its severest form?
So all six of those could be, but the one that places you or increases your chances the most would be, let me think, headache, loss of smell, loss of appetite, fever, hoarseness, sore throat, chest pain, fatigue, confusion, muscle pain, and then very importantly, shortness of breath, diarrhea, abdominal pain. So you can see it's a very wide spectrum of symptoms.
Mm.
Exactly. And importantly, these symptoms on its own is not enough to predict. These researchers also had to combine this with things such as gender, comorbidity, so other diseases, existing conditions, so all of those had to be brought and combined. And then it increases our chances. But this is very important, this study, because now if we can predict 8 days in advance who is at greater risk, and we know about some medications that improves your chances, it really, really takes the fight against COVID to another level.
If you're just joining us, we're on the line with Professor Bertram Fielding, who's Director of Research at UWC. And we're talking about this new study, which has identified six specific types of COVID-19. If you've got a question for the professor, then you can get in touch on 021-446-0567 or send a voice note to 072-567-1567. As you say, when you look at this list, Prof, from 1 to 6, they look very similar. You start off with number 1, which is flu-like with no fever, headache, loss of smell, muscle pain, cough, sore throat, chest pain, no fever. And these are the symptoms that we've come to associate with COVID. Then it's flu-like with a fever. Then you add the gastrointestinal element, then sort of fatigue and chest pain, and then confusion is one of the others, and then the severe level 3, abdominal and respiratory, headache, loss of smell, loss of appetite, cough. It's such a broad range, isn't it? In terms of if I wake up tomorrow and I've got a sore throat and a bit of a sore tummy and a cough, do I need to go into panic mode? And what do I do with that information? Do I just say, okay, well, it could be COVID. Let me self-isolate for 10 days or however long they say now, and be done with it. Do I need to go and get tested? What can we do with the layperson with this advice?
So remember, still the most important number one step would be you need to contact your primary healthcare provider, and they would then advise based on the symptoms that you currently experience. And not all of these symptoms happen at the same time. They kind of develop over time. So those who are most severe or end up with the most severe form of the disease really only get to hospital at day 13. Which is a bit worrying.
Sure.
Remember, there's a stigma in South Africa about being COVID positive and being tested, and that we need to change. So really, if you wake up with any symptoms, any flu-like symptoms, any symptoms that is out of the ordinary, so your body is not feeling the way it should, contact your primary healthcare provider. They would then advise whether you self-isolate, whether you self-quarantine, or whether you should come in for testing. But you should really leave it up to the experts.
Would it be true to say, Prof, that most people who receive a positive COVID test would actually be experiencing the mildest of the six clusters? I mean, we don't want to scaremonger here.
Definitely. This virus causes a syndrome of disease. And remember, in South Africa, what is it now? Just over 70% of people have recovered. And if you look at the number that we have tested positive in South Africa, I believe that that's only a small percentage of the actual numbers. Mm. So the vast majority of people will be either asymptomatic or very, very mild symptoms. If you look worldwide, the number of people ending up in hospital is extremely small. So there is absolutely no concern when you contract a COVID. And we still see in South Africa the overwhelming majority of those who require hospitalization and ventilation especially. So they are critical and they're in ICU, are older than 55, and they have these other diseases, the other comorbidities. And that's a very, very small percentage of people.
Sure, sure. And Elizabeth is on the line from Table View and has a question, in fact, about comorbidities. A very good morning to you, Elizabeth. Thanks so much for joining us.
Morning. Thanks for the program. I just want to say that comorbidities is not a death sentence. I'm 66. I'm morbidly obese. I've got diabetes. I got the virus. I was off from work for one day.
That's extraordinary. Or is it, Prof? Because I'm saying that's extraordinary because the three factors that Elizabeth has mentioned there have been the factors that we've been told, you know, that are the red flags for this virus. And yet Elizabeth is saying, and you were tested, were you, Elizabeth?
Yes, I'm in an old age home, so they tested all of us. I didn't know I had it. I just got the, but I mean, obviously, you know, being fat and old and all that, everybody said, oh, my word, you're going to die, you're going to die. It's not true.
Did you feel unwell?
No, I had a slight head cold. And I thought, okay, I've got a slight head cold. And I had a metal taste in my mouth, and that's all. But I was working, I was hunting on, looking after my husband, no problem. Thank goodness.
Prof, is that unusual? Is Elizabeth sort of bucking the trend? Is she an anomaly?
Sarah Jane, if I could hug Elizabeth now, I would. This is what I've been saying from day one. The chances of you developing the severe disease is small, and your chances of dying is even smaller. So the scaremongering that's been going on in the media has fueled this fear. So your chances of survival is huge still, even with the age, even with the comorbidities. You read very often in the newspaper, or very often you read about the severe cases in the newspaper, but nobody reports on the 98-year-old and the 70-year-old with all of the comorbidities surviving. And that's very important. It is not a death sentence at all, not even close.
There's the fact that Elizabeth has shared that story, as you say, is quite heartening, because certainly at the start of the pandemic in South Africa, there was very much, when we started to see those numbers of fatalities going up, and we saw that, yes, they were the link between the comorbidities, and it basically became, there sort of almost became a conversation of, as Elizabeth had rightly said, if you've got diabetes, if you've got hypertension, if you are obese, that's it for you. And that's just not true. Is it a case that you're more likely to get COVID, or is it that you're more likely to have a more severe type of COVID if you've got a comorbidity?
So everybody's at equal risk of developing, based on the figures, of contracting it. It is greater risk to develop severe COVID. So it places you at greater risk. However, remember, only this past month or so, we now know of steroids that can be used as treatment, very successful in severe cases. We know of blood thinners or anticoagulants, and some of the anti-HIV drugs are now being used. And all of those increases your chances of recovering from severe COVID even more. The minister spoke about 25% for those steroids, survival rate, or improving of your chances when you have severe COVID. So now the chances of survival are even bigger. So it makes that percentage of people at risk of dying even smaller.
I just want to go to a couple more questions, Prof, if I can. I would be asked, how can you tell 8 days in advance that someone will need hospitalization or not?
And that's the beautiful thing. So they would look at your so they would look at your symptoms. And it's not 8 days of hospitalization. It's 8 days before you develop that severe disease. And that's another misconception. We believe in South Africa that if you're infected, by tomorrow you would be ill. By day three, you would be in hospital. Day four, you would be dead. Mm. That is not the case. On average, the average person ends up in hospital after 13 days of the first symptoms appearing. What these guys are saying now is 8 days before, you end up in hospital with that severe cases, with that severe symptoms, and you need ventilation. They can predict just on those symptoms and how they develop and based on your risk factors, whether you would be severe or not, or whether you could be severe or not.
Mm-hmm. Somebody else asking if all the symptoms have to be present together or if it can be just one.
Definitely not all the symptoms will be together. This virus is called severe acute respiratory syndrome. And remember, a syndrome is not one symptom. Mm. A syndrome consists of various symptoms together. So that's why I said we should not, as the general public, look at a symptom or combinations and make predictions. We need to leave that to the healthcare professionals. They would look at various combinations of that. And if you look at all of these, the common is that very severe one, level three. If you start having breathing difficulties, if there is loss of memory or confusion, can you see what that tells you? It tells you that your lungs have become involved. It tells you that your central nervous system has become involved. That obviously places you at greater risk than just having sniffles and a cough.
Prof, we are going to have to leave it. I'm so sorry. We are going to have to leave it there. We're fast approaching the news, but it's always great to have you on the show.